In between
oh, yes,
businesses?
he had a drugstore on the north side in 1919.
So he came to Pittsburgh earlier?
Well, he came through a sister of his who married a man in western Pennsylvania. And through this sister, he and another sister, they were two sisters and a brother in the family, that migrated here. In fact, Julian Levinson's mother and father. Julian's mother was Philip's sister.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Do you know Lou Abner?
Sure.
Well, Lou's mother and Philip were sister and brother.
I see. Okay.
They're my cousins and my nephews.
Can be proud of them. Did you work with your husband in the
business? No. I did that for a short time just to fill in at the office and do inventories at home.
What was your social life like when you were a young married?
Well, that I had no social life here.
Did you find it hard to meet young people? Well, there was a big discrepancy in your age.
No, it wasn't that. I had a very odd experience. Philip was not a particularly social person. Mm-hmm. And at that time, his main ambition was his business. And I come at this bad time of the year, and I knew no one here in Pittsburgh other than one. I had a cousin, Art and Mary Levison, living here. And there were invitations that would be extended to Philip through the office. But I never heard about them. And I know quite some time later, we were out to dinner at Klein's. In those days, one of the places Sunday afternoon was to go to Klein's. And somebody, he introduced me, and she did. She just came right out with it. She said, oh, you're that New York snob.
Because he had gotten the invitation.
And
he ignored them.
And really, at that time, my outlet was going back to New York or going out to Brownsville to visit with my family. And not until the children came along and getting involved with their activities that I really got to know people. And to this day, I'm here over 40 years. And when I get together with people who talk of the old Hill District or Beachview, and I went to school with this one, I still feel like an outsider.
What type of family vacations did you take?
Actually, they were separate. I took the children away. Mm. And he'd have all that freedom to just dream and work.
Did you basically go to New York back to your family in Brownsville?
Well, basically, we'd go to New York before the children started for camp. And the family did live near the seashore. And by that time, my brother was married and had a youngster, a little boy. And it would be a ritual that after lunch, we'd get the kids into their bathing suits, and I'd drive them to the beach, and we'd spend a couple of hours there. And then various places, whether it was to the ice follies or things like that in Manhattan, or take them out on trips.
Did you have any special hobbies or anything like that at that time?
No, I really didn't, because I don't know what happened. It was such a contrast from having worked. And then finding the time on my hands that I did want to work here, and I was discouraged. Mm-hmm. And with the children, that really most of my life was centered around them at that point.
What kind of neighborhood did you live in? You was in Squirrel Hill?
Yeah. I spent practically all my life between Beacon and Beacon and Whiteman. From 1936 until 1960, when I came down to Oakland.
And the economic situation that you and your husband had, it was fairly...
Well, it was comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
There were no upheavals about it.
Mm-hmm. did most of what you did culturally revolve around the synagogue and things? Did you maintain
pretty much
your Orthodox?
So, yes. No, I maintained my Orthodox background, but it has strayed a long way as to raising my children and things. And I'll be very honest, there are times that I have a lot of guilt feelings about it.
About maintaining the Orthodox?
About not setting little stronger standards.
Religious standards?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm very set in some of those. I think some of those, while they say that you don't have to do certain things to believe in God, but somehow or other, some of these here traditions and rituals kind of lead you into it. And at least that's my feeling.
Okay. Were you involved at all politically in Pittsburgh?
No.
How do you think the neighborhood's changed, Squirrel Hill? Can you reflect a little bit about that?
Well, I really am not up in Squirrel Hill that I should know about. Of course, to me, first of all, one of the most shocking and inexplainable situations came about through my children in Squirrel Hill and in Alderdice. And I suppose this must have been in the late 40s, early 50s. As I say, from my background in New York, I had no feeling of insecurity as far as not having this or not having that because the other one did. Of when I discovered that the kids of Alderdice could deliberately take a sweater and turn it back to see what it was made of or where it came from, this to me just absolutely shocked me to no end. And at that point, I'll be very honest that with the children, I went the other extreme. Instead of going out and getting them what the others have, I would not let them have it. And I remember distinctly saying to Marilyn, I said, if you're going to have it now, that by the time you go away to school, you want to go out of town to school, what will there be left for you? And she fought me tooth and nail, but I stuck to my guns. And the outcome was that when her trunk did arrive at school, she did write me a letter and say, Mother, you were so right. She said, what a thrill, and to hear the girls ooh and ah as to what was in that trunk.
Mm-hmm. Both of your daughters went through public school through high school?
Yeah.
And then they went away to school?
Marilyn went away to school. Carol stayed home. That's why she's away now.
Where did Marilyn go?
Marilyn went to Wisconsin and then to Margaret Morrison.
And
Carol went to Pitt and graduated from Pitt.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about how you first became involved in community organizations.
Well, my first introduction actually to any form of outside of the home and the synagogue was through Hadassah.
Mm-hmm.
And having developed, or it was just part of me, always being concerned for the Jewish people. And in all our prayers of this prayer next year in Jerusalem and the dream of Eretz Yisrael, that at the time the standards that Hadassah stood for in offering medical help to that area appealed to me. It had a certain amount of humane feelings.
You basically got involved with the Hadassah after the State of Israel was.
No, it was before that. It was before that. Yeah.
When your kids started going away to, I mean, to.
No,
to
no, they were no. Well, it might have been around that. I really became fully involved, actually, when Marilyn did go away. I had been a member, and I had taken certain offices prior to that. But I know when she went away, I accepted a presidency and really became very involved. And at one point, I was very anxious. This was around 1956 or 54. No, it was around 54, 55, just before she was going away to school. I wanted to go to Israel very badly. And, of course, I had my children involved with what I was doing, whether it was addressing envelopes or sending out membership receipts of things. And at the time, there was the Alice Seligsberg School, sponsored by Hadassah, in fashion designing and weaving of cloth and design, and Marilyn was interested in it, that she decided, she got the idea that if I were to go, she'd love to go with me. Whereupon my husband, one and the only times, he made a very emphatic no to it, and I says, why? He said, she is just at the stage of being so impressionistic. He said, I have a feeling if you take her, she will not go on to school, but she'll stay there, and I cannot lose her. And I had to just forget about it.
Isn't it kind of ironic that that's what one of your daughters did? Can we just kind of go into what other organizations and things like that, what organizations you're involved with?
Well, it was a case actually, and it's really comparatively of recent times. I've been, it seems, I will say, I'm kind of partial to anything that involves children, whether it was the Children's Aid Society of Jewish Women, while I never took an active part, but always supported their causes. And, of course, my biggest, as I say, my inner feelings has always been the love of my people. And as long as Philip was alive, I will say, and it's true that he was a real chauvinist. Mm-hmm. He did not believe in women's lib know-how. And there were, when it was a case of becoming involved or supporting these things, I knew he did not shirk his responsibility, and I would handle mine. But of course, my whole outlook of things in general changed after he passed away. And I, for one, I don't know, developed the responsibility of carrying on where he left off and not pleading widowhood as far as my financial mm-hmm. responsibilities are concerned. And I did. I discussed it with the children. I was very open with them. And their answer to me was, look, Mother, it's yours. You're of sound mind. You owe us nothing. And you're a free agent to do as you please. And I've let my conscience be my guide.
That's very nice. You've become involved with the Federation and mm-hmm. with Israel Bonds.
And this, too, was all a feeling that, especially after seeing Auschwitz and seeing the one memorial left in Warsaw, but for the grace of God, my whole family, we could be there. Mm-hmm. And if I was spared, then I have got to help my people.
Let's just go back a little bit. Can you recall how you were affected by some of the major eras in the history of the United States, like Prohibition or the Depression or the wars?
Well, I was quite young during Prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, I know there was these talks of these speakeasies and things. The only thing I do remember is a period of these gangster violent movies. Just like now you have this permissiveness. The other was this here, James Cagney with the Chicago bootleggers and all that. And whether I could not face reality or what, I was one that could never go to any of those movies. Any more so, I haven't seen any movie that I could remember that I cannot take violence, and I cannot take, I don't know, whatever you would call it, abnormalities or mm-hmm. what. And I really feel that television is doing a tremendous injustice to the world. That in just like everything else, whether you talk of atomic power, that it never starts out with what good it's going to do for humanity. It's always the evil.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no question in my mind, not everyone is strong enough to weigh the right and the wrong, and there is to what's right to one is wrong to another, but nevertheless, the average intelligence, the things that go on, I feel, is, I can go them one better. And I find it, that to me is more disturbing in this age, whether it started with Prohibition. Of course, the Depression, I was very fortunate, I myself. I worked for a company, for a linen shop on Fifth Avenue in New York, and it was one of the few organizations that were dependent on women, and I did not suffer through the Depression personally.
Did your parents?
At that point, my father had had major surgery in 26, and he could not, he was practically retired from that point on. And I was the sole support at home. And with the kind of a ingenious manager that my mother was, that regardless of what was going on, and she might give her my whole pay envelope every week, that when I announced that I was being married, just like you say, had the story, my mother's bank account, my mother handed me a savings account, saying, this is your money, you can do with it as you please. Did you want a wedding? Do you see what you have? Do you see what you can afford? But instead I had the thrill that in the lean years of our marriage, that when I come to New York, I had that account there, and I could go out and shower the family with things that ordinarily they did not have.
Now, when you married and moved away, was it a hardship on your parents because you had been
Well, by that point, my brother, he went through a lean period of the Depression, and it was a case where I was still home at the time, where he was starting a business and could not draw on it. And I know my sister-in-law to this day, when anything comes up, she'll talk. We owned a car in partnership at the time, my brother and myself. And I always had a $5 bill in the glove compartment. And she'd say, they always knew they had that security, that if they ran out of gas or trouble, there was that $5 bill in the truck. And by the time I got married, my brother was able to kind of take over. And it's ironic, we're just a year apart, and we've been 400 miles apart for so many years, but we think exactly alike, and even to the extent that through Carol, his daughter is living in Haifa, married to a Sabra. Mm. And at this point, we're both commuting with Israel. That's how close we are. And he took over, and it was the same thing with him, that he'd make out his weekly payroll, and there was an envelope for his parents at the same time.
How long did they live, your parents?
They died within 14 months of each other. They were about 77, 78 years. But they died of natural causes, and I will say that if to someone like myself, at the time they passed on, it was traumatic. You don't want to lose your parents, but at the same time, there was a gratification that we did not give them their bouquets after they died. We did for them whatever was decently the thing to do, as to not only respect, but to make life as easy as possible for them at no time to feel the destitution of want or where will they land. They had their own apartment, they had their own setup, they were able to continue with their associations with the synagogue, with their friends, and still be what Mama Lushin would be balabatim for themselves, be their own bosses. This is something we don't see too much of today. Today, there's no stigma on putting parents in a home or things here. That it's something I can't.
How about the war? You lived through two real major ones.
Well, the First World War, of course, I was a real youngster, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of the childish ballyhoo of over there, the Yanks are coming, rallies. I sold victory stamps, 25-cent stamps, and if you filled a book, you got a $25 Liberty bond. And whoever came into the house, they'd get nabbed by me.
You started early, didn't you?
Well, it was patriotic.
Yes.
It was patriotic. And, of course, the First World War was something, it was very remote, but at the same time, there was more of a true patriotic spirit, that's all I could say.
Mm. You felt that more in the First World War than the Second?
I personally course, the second was already, I think, in a way, people were more enlightened through radio commentary and all. And I think all this here colors, at least, I will admit it did me, that being double-crossed for the attack on Pearl Harbor, and at that point, it wasn't only the Germans, it was the Japs, and it was a very... I was older, and it was a more frightening thing.
Were you aware of the Holocaust while it was happening?
No. And this is something why I feel so strongly that today it's incumbent on someone like myself to constantly bring it up. And it must not be pushed under the rug.
It's really interesting. Was most of completely changing tracks here. The business and professional life that you and your husband led, were your relationships mostly with colleagues and employees, and what kind of relationships did you have with them?
It was on a little above average type of communication. My husband was a very educated man, and he was a liberal in the deepest sense. And right now, when I hear of Carter's inauguration, I remember Philip telling me he had a store in Manassas at the time, that when Roosevelt was to be inaugurated in 1933, I think it was, that he and some friends from Manassas decided to drive to Washington for the inauguration, because they felt so strongly that it was imminent that there was going to be a tremendous change in the country.